This is Brother Bedford, and welcome to Conversations with Black Millionaires.
Joining me today, I feel honored and blessed that I'm being joined in conversation by the man that is behind the success of many of the most celebrated names in boxing for over three decades. He started his career in the 70s promoting a young Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, and other world champions. In 1978, he formed his own company and he signed two young dynamic Olympic champions, brothers Leon and Michael Spinks, and he and Michael Spinks dominated the industry throughout the 80s, drawing huge crowds, A-list crowds to all of his promotions. He added an entertainment arm to his empire in the early 90s, and he produced the blockbuster pay-per-view event with the legendary James Brown, Living in America. And I could go on and on with all of the awards and the accolades that this gentleman has accumulated over the years, but I feel honored and blessed. He is definitely one of my heroes that I idolize as an entrepreneur, a deal maker, and just an upstanding gentleman who's been a pillar in our community. So without further delay, I want to welcome you to the program, the legendary boxing promoter, entertainment extraordinaire, Mr. Butch Lewis. Thank you for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me, Brother Bedford. Glad I could make it.
Oh, I really do appreciate it, and I do know that you have some prior engagements, and I don't want to keep you long, and I just wanted to get into some serious questions here to help all of those who listen and read the materials to find out what it truly means to be a black entrepreneur and how to really navigate all the trials that come with that, okay?
Okay.
Yes, sir. First question I have for you, Mr. Lewis, how did you get your start as an entrepreneur? I mean, to the really beginning stages, how did it get started for you?
Well, probably it started when I was a teenager. I just always was kind of the guy around the way, the projects and on the corner that had the ideas as to what me and my little crew would do to try to make some ends so we could have some money in our pocket, go buy some clothes on the weekend, show off and that sort of thing. So I always, unlike, you know, what they feel the typical inner city kid does is, you know, we always our plan is to throw rocks at the penitentiary. It gets up.
Right.
I wasn't throwing no rocks at the penitentiary. Every time my guys come up with a plan where I thought it may be throwing rocks at the penitentiary, I said, time out. That's not the plan. That is not the plan. So I guess it started as far back as me being a teenager and just figuring out ways. And you know what? A great deal of it came from me watching the Islamic community, the Muslim community, with the black Muslims. And I saw older guys who were like thugs, gangsters, drug dealers, drug addicts. They just clean their lives up, and
right.
they would be, you know, totally different guys with the selling of the newspapers and the different things and the incense and the oils they'd had at tables. And I would be like, whoa, this guy I knew him when his mother, his grandmother, his father, his relatives, nobody could do anything with him. But there was something to that black Muslim community that taught something and instilled something into black men to lift themselves up. And, not having been a Muslim, but I probably spent a lot of time then and now in the Muslim community. But I say that a quick story. On Market Street in Philadelphia, there was, you know, would be where you'd find a lot of the, well, they call us hustlers, and that's what, you know, I don't have a problem having been called that, where you see the selling of the rings and watches and anything you could think of. I wasn't selling no drugs, but me and my crew would be selling rings and watches and all sorts of things. And the old head guys, the older head guys would see me and my crew, because we'd be like anywhere from like 13, 14, nobody over 16 in my crew. But I would see the Muslim brothers with their tables of incense and oils and all that. One, the police wouldn't come and bother them, and they'd be right out there on Market Street selling their wares. And then two, I'm wondering how they get away with doing that right there. Like, something is another plan we missing here. Because right. The old heads would run us away, be running, get on out of here. So I went over to a Muslim brother, and I asked him, and he said, well, one, I have what is called a vendor's license. Mm-hmm. A vendor's license, I asked him to explain. He said, you get it at City Hall, $3 a license, which allows you to sell your wares out here as long as none of the stores, if you have a table and you set up the store, the permanent store is there, as long as it doesn't bother him, mm-hmm. and you work it out with him, you can stay right there. I said, for $3, it changes the whole picture.
Right.
I took all my guys, make a long story long, I took all my guys, we went down City Hall, we got about 10 vendor license for $3 a piece. We then go and buy trays of rings and watches, all sorts of things. And we all got a vendor's license in our back pocket.
Mm-hmm.
We then go, it was a pawn shop jewelry store, like a big, huge spot. And they had a for sale sign, a help wanted sign in the window. And it was one of my guys who everybody likes, Michael. He was like a chubby guy, but a guy that everybody liked him. And so I said, okay, you're going to go in there and apply for the job, for the help wanted job. He says, what? I said, no, look, just go in, apply for the job, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Long story long, he gets the job. Now, the owners of the store, the husband and wife, once they got around Michael and they trusted Michael and everything, they would leave and go to have lunch, lock up all the cases in the register, but he would be in the store. So when customers come in, like a customer, I see you outside, and I said, look, take a look at this ring. Sir, take a look at this ring. Nah, that's junk. That. I said, okay, tell you what you do. Take it into the jeweler, let him appraise it, and then you come out and negotiate with me.
Right.
So he would go into the store. My guy is in there. He would take the glass, the magnifying glass, and act like he's dipping in all kind of stuff and looking at it. And he'd say something like, okay, this ring is worth $3,000, $5,000. Okay, but I can't do anything till the boss gets back. But he'll give you between $3,000 and $5,000 for it. Okay, now the guy, now you come outside. I'm standing there.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay, let me have the ring. And, well, what do you want for it? Give me $1,000 now. I ain't got $1,000. We go through that. Whatever you had, you give it to me. Because now you felt you already knew what you could pawn it for. Because you just came out of a pawn shop. But that's my guy in the pawn shop. Right? But we were kids, so they didn't think we could think that far. Right? And the police, because we had vendor's license, when the police come, hey, what you got? I just pulled my vendor's license out. $3 license. They look at it and say, you got a vendor's license? Yeah.
Right.
Which entitled us to, as long as we were respectful, to come up to you and try to sell, our product.
Right.
So when the old heads was wondering how we was rolling, so we would be done. At the end of the day, we have money going shopping.
Right.
And the old heads would be like, what the hell are y'all, what are y'all doing? Why is everybody buying your stuff? You know what I mean? So, again, I guess that was like, that's just one of like the plan I would come up with to kind of keep us from throwing rocks at the penitentiary. Because if you, the customer, come back and say, I found out this stuff wasn't right, I'm going to the police. Well, go to the police then, because you shouldn't have been buying it from us like that then. So now you know, also put yourself in jeopardy. If you want to do it
right,
like that.
Right.
But I got a right to say, I didn't tell you this was stolen. I didn't say that. I didn't say anything or guarantee anything other than to say, what would you pay? This is what I want, and make a deal. So
right.
having gone through plans like those for a while as teenagers, and then
right.
I guess just
already,
mm-hmm.
you were already bitten with the entrepreneurial. It wasn't like you had to start a job and then you went to something else. It seems like you had that entrepreneurial spirit all along.
Right. I mean, it's just, and I guess it's something. It's really not something that you can. Give a list of things that a person should do or have a feeling for or want to do. You have to, I mean, it's something that it's like you're driven. I mean, it's like one, it's like a gift that God gives you as your tools, almost. And I was, you know, I'm telling you that once, I would anything I would take on to have such a can-do attitude. Don't take no. I mean, really, not just saying it. I mean, really, wouldn't I've been thrown out, literally, thrown out of buildings when I went out to Chicago to try to get Ali to sign a fight to fight for me. Mm-hmm. I had never done a fight. I'd never promoted a fight in my life. I'm
right.
real young. And Herbert Muhammad and the other Muslims, they said, hold up, Lewis. Go promote some fights somewhere else and then come back here. What are you talking about?
Right.
You're coming here. So one day I was in Chicago and I went up to Herbert's office. He said, look, Lewis, I told you, don't come out here no more. So they grabbed me by my arm, the security.
Right.
And took me downstairs in the elevator, took me out in front of the building. Never forget, it was snowing. And just put me out the building. And the two security guys said, look, Butch, man, we like you, man. Don't make us hurt you, man. Now go ahead. Now go somewhere else, man. Leave this stuff alone. When I realized it, I had left my top coat upstairs in the office through all this motion in my briefcase and everything. I said, hold up, man. You got my top coat and my briefcase up there. Hey.
Right.
Butch, man, stay right here. Now, they came down with the briefcase, but they said they couldn't find my top coat. I'm standing outside in the snow in Chicago. I'm like, hold up, man. You know I had a coat. I didn't know if they were just taking my coat or what they were doing. I just got this cashmere coat, too. And there wasn't no cell phone stuff going on then, so I went to, you know, like one of them telephone booths with just a little telephone. It ain't even a booth. It's just, you know how a telephone got a little enclosure on the top of it? I got
right.
on the telephone trying to call back to Philly. I was calling back to Philly, and I called Joe Frazier, and I said, man, and Joe said, man, you out there messing with them boo. I told you. They going to hurt you out there. You know, because me and Joe was cool. You know what I mean? Because
right.
my pop was one of his original investors in Cloverlay. So I had...
Okay.
I called. He said, man, I said, but they got my coat. He said, man, leave the coat. Just get your ass out of that. You know what I mean? I mean, but it was like I was driven. I stayed outside for a while. Went into like a little restaurant to try to regroup, to think if I should go back up there. But then them brothers who had escorted me out of the building, they wasn't like playing. They was like,
right.
you see this here, but we don't want to hurt you, man. You know what I mean? We like
right.
you, man, but don't come back up in here. And, but, you know, I would go out there. It was this motel chain. I don't know what, I can't remember, but it had like a little bear cub with a nightcap on it. And I could get rooms out by the airport for like $19.95 a night when I would go out there to try to see Ali. Because I would always go out on my own and stay where I'm staying. Ali would say, Ali all the time would say, well, and he would encourage me. Yeah, come on back, Butch. We'll keep talking to him. You keep talking to him. We're going to work this out. He'll keep encouraging me, and I keep coming right back. I mean, so I would go and buy me turkey, breast sliced turkey, American cheese, some bread, maybe some Miracle Whip if it was in the winter, and just set it out on the ledge. And if I stayed there 2 or 3 days, that's what I would eat for those 2 or 3 days while I was there. They would, Ali was saying, well, come on, man, we're going to go to dinner over to such and such. Nah, I'm good. Because I got to try to remain independent. I'm trying to be a big time.
Right.
I'm going back to the 1995 motel eating turkey and cheese sandwiches.
Right.
So that's the kind of, I can't, that's what I'm saying. I can't tell you, the long story long is that I ended up signing Ali. That's the point.
Right.
I ended up signing him.
Right.
Never doing a, my first fight was him. I had never done a fight in my life. My first fight, I never done a fight. Ali the European champion in Munich, Germany. Never done a fight in my life. You know what I mean? Nothing. So, I mean, here again, now that I got it, then I was like, oh, man, what? I don't know what to do.
Right.
So, I mean, you just, there's so many sleepless nights and so many questions that I can't tell you how I ended up working the things out, you know what I mean? Because you don't know, but you go forward. And what kept me going was like a fear, but a fear of failing,
mm-hmm.
not to fail. I guess I want not to fail. I know I can do this. Not to fail. I'm not going to fail. And, you know, God giving me my tools, health and strength to do it. But, I mean, that I can't. What can I say, Brother Bedford? It's nothing that I can really tell someone that they follow these particular guidelines and they can be a successful entrepreneur to make millions and even perhaps billions in today's world. I don't know what it is. I'm still driven by that fear, but it's a fear of failing. That still
mm-hmm.
drives me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now, you know, trying to get, I believe, very strongly in understand ownership.
Mm-hmm.
In owning, if it's nothing but a hot dog stand,
right.
And you're out there on the corner and you're selling your hot dogs and you're
right.
doing the job, but it's your hot dog stand.
Right.
It's your business. It drives you to get out there, be out there before the sun comes up and then be there before the moon comes up. You know what I mean? But
right.
you're doing it for you
mm-hmm.
and your family and your loved ones. Mm-hmm. It's a different, you know, you know, and I was never good at taking orders from folk. I just was never good at that.
Right.
I
was about to say, I know you mentioned getting your start, and obviously you were inspired by the Muslims and the
right.
things that you were doing. What motivated you? I know you did. Did you even have Butch Lewis Productions when you did the first fight, or you did? Just
that's when it came into play. I didn't really have it,
right?
But it came into play after what happened was I went I had was a 90-day Ali convinced Herbert Muhammad. In the group of Muslim brothers there to give me a chance,
mm-hmm.
and they gave me a 90-day window to deliver certain things,
right?
In a contract, I had 90 days. So Ali said, "Okay, now you got it. Come on, but you got to go get it, man. Blah, 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 I like you. Blah, blah, blah. You smart. You too smart to be over there with Joe Frazier. You know all that." All that kind of stuff, right?
Right.
Okay, I got this contract. I'm sitting here looking at this contract. I'm like, what do I do now? True story. I went to a telephone booth and tried to reach Howard Cosell at ABC. I'm telling you. Who's calling? I said, Butch Lewis. I got a contract with Muhammad Ali. I need to talk to him about doing this fight.
Right.
They was like, please. They was hanging up on me, and you know what I mean? He didn't
right.
have a clue. And it was like I was some sort of nut.
Right.
Tell him I call him, get a number, I call him back. So, you know what I'm saying? I would go through all that kind of stuff. So I went to DK. I went to Don King. I said, listen, DK, I got a 90-day option. But the word had went through the boxing world saying this young upstart, Butch Lewis, has gotten Ali and Herbert Muhammad to sign something, blah, blah, Madison Square Garden didn't have it, Don King didn't have it, Bob Arum, none of them, me. I ain't never did a fight in my life. So the word had spread, but hell, I didn't know, and I didn't have no offers, no nothing to be prepared to deal with this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I went to DK. He tried to offer me a job. I said, whoa, Don, listen to me. I come to you first. You know it's real, because I know you've been out there, and Herbert's telling you this was Ali insisting on it. And blah, 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 blah. So you know it's real. Mm-hmm. And what I need is for you to, with your expertise from the business, I got the contract on the boxer. I got the contract on Ali. So, right. Okay, let's go in business together on this fight. Blah, 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 blah. Ah, my man. I said, listen, Don, let me say this to you. You paying me $25,000 a year. I was making $25,000 when I was 17, 18 years old.
Right.
You can't do – I'm in the car business. I'm coming from the automobile business my family had.
Mm-hmm.
I was making $150,000, $200,000 a year running my family automobile business. What are you offering? I'm not looking for a job. What are you talking about? So we went through that. DK didn't get it. He just thought, I don't know, I was just a young upstart, blah, 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 blah. So I left there, went over to Bob Arum's office. Bob Arum hadn't had a major fight, and Ali and them wasn't really feeling him. Herbert Muhammad and them, they was doing most of that stuff with King, and every now and then King and the Garden would do a co-promotion, Madison Square Garden. So, long story long, I said with Arum, Arum, he's like, whoa, he looked at the contract, his eyes got big. He was like, yeah, we can work this out. Now, you see, we worked it out where he gave me 35%. He kept 65% because he knew the business. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to do. You know what I'm saying? Raising money, getting this, who to call, boo, I don't know none of that. I was calling Howard Cosell.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So working a deal out with him, and then DK did his typical thing. I sold out to the white man. I ain't went over to the white man. I came to you, man. Begged you, let's do this business. And you just insisted on giving me a job.
Right.
You know, so it was that kind of thing. But me and DK, we're good now. You know, we're fighting all y'all the time. But from there, I mean, it's just things that you do, Brother Biff. It's things that you... Sleepless nights, you don't see, you know, your my wife had to raise our kids because I was never there running around trying to make these things happen. It's a lot of sacrifice and discipline that goes when you see that, when people see the final bows and so forth. It's also, it could be either I'm going to take the bow or I'm going to take the bullet.
Right.
One or the other. And not everybody's prepared to do that. We don't really understand ownership and the risk business.
Mm-hmm.
The risk business.
What do you mean by risk? Because when I interviewed George Frazier, who wrote the book Success Runs in Our Race, he mentioned that how, as black people, we really don't even get into entrepreneurship because we are risk adverse.
Yes. Listen, this is what we do, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example. I have a big fight. I go over to HBO, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I say, listen, this is what I want to do. We're going to go on this as a partnership. I'm going to put up some money and guarantee part of it. You're going to put up money and guarantee part of it. Now, if it wins, this is how the money breaks down, and we split the money. But if it don't, then we lose money, and I lose as well, because I'm in the risk business. I'm in the risk part of it. I didn't go in there. They said, well, I can take you out of the risk business, B. I said, yeah, take this $2 million out. Take this $5 million. You out the risk business. We got this. I'm like, nah. I'm going to get in the risk business with you. Because it ain't that you love me that you giving me $5 million and telling me I ain't got no risk, but you take all the money if it go up. You know what I mean? And this is all I can get. No. So, yeah, do you have sleepless nights? Yes, you do. Do you win all the time? No, you don't. Some of them risk, you know what I mean, where they want to tell me, well, you can't do it. I said, wait a second. You can't have it both ways. You can't have the upside, and then I'm in the risk business with you. If you give me a number that takes me out there, now you can reach a number. I'll come out the risk business now if the number's right. You know what I'm saying? I'll come on out the risk business with you. But if I believe in what I'm selling, see, and I'm in the people business, so it's not like I have a car which I know sells for $20,000. So I know I gotta get $20,000. I should get $20,000. I'm in one of the most difficult lines. That's the people business. So I can go into you and tell you about a fight. I can tell you about a movie. I can tell you about an actor, what he's worth in this film. But that's all me selling that, because there ain't nowhere that says, okay, yeah, this fight, yeah, it'll guarantee. No. It's a whole lot of shit can happen. You right. know what I mean? And when you in the risk business. I mean from the weather. You understand me? The weather can mess you up and take you out of play and just have you lose millions of dollars. Where you having the fight? Anybody showing up because they can't even get to the fight because the weather done kept them out of my way. What you got going up against it? When you talk about movies or, you know, like music, I mean concerts, all that kind of thing, you just have to kind of put a number on it, negotiating with the talent and saying, okay, I'm in the risk business, goddamn, let's go. Make this movie. You know what I mean? Right. I'm paying you, Denzel, $10 million, whew, and I'm paying that. The movie's going to cost me $20 to make. I got to figure it's got to do $50 minimum
right.
just for me to break even.
Right.
So I'm in the risk business all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to go in, when I say we, black folk,
mm-hmm.
we want to go in and say, give me the $5 million and then put me in the upside too. They ain't going to give you both. So we are quick to take the little money, to grab the little money. It ain't a little money. I don't want to say $5 million, a couple million is a little money. I don't want to sound like that. But they give you, what they're giving you is, yes, a pittance of what you may be able to potential it has, but you could
right.
lose.
Mm-hmm.
But you gotta. Do you believe in it? Is it really what you think? Have you done your homework?
Put some skin in the game. Got to put some skin in the game.
That's correct. Yes, sir. I'm telling you, I had sleepless nights, Jack, to where I put on shows from concerts to boxing where it's snow.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm out there shoveling the sidewalk for three blocks so that people can get to that venue. Me, I'm the promoter. I'm out there with my
right.
guys shoveling with a snow shovel, go to the radio station, letting them know the TV, right. TV guy, look, we the shovel off. You can get it in.
Clear walkway. Ain't no
you understand me? The parking lot clean. You understand? I got to let them know, Jack. Because I'm out here getting ready to get blown out the water, boy. You know what I'm saying? Come on out. You know what I mean? I done changed it up. 2-for-1. Something. But you got to roll, baby. You got to keep moving. You can. You know what I mean? It ain't like people think when they sit back and they see finished product. They don't know you done been through, boy. You done
right.
Yes, sir.
You have those sleepless nights. Like, I mean, what really pulls you through? What is it that you focus on that keeps you driven like that?
Well,
problems and obstacles.
There's several things that one. See, another thing we don't do, Brother Bedford. We don't learn rules.
Mm-hmm.
We go into things we don't learn the rules.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm gonna give you an example. You can't win at Monopoly if you don't know the rules.
Right.
Because when you go past go, I can tell you, Brother Bedford, when you pass go, you get
$25. Right.
And if you don't know the rules, and you ain't $25 a lot of money to you, so you accept the $25.
Mm-hmm.
When I pass go, hold up, fellas. Now, the $25 don't work. The rules say I'm supposed to get $200.
Mm-hmm.
When I pass go, I want my $200. I don't want $150. I want $200.
Mm-hmm.
If I put it all in, I done come around this board, got paid my rent, didn't go to jail, paid my taxes, all that there. No, sir. When I pass go, I'm getting $200. So I know the rules of the game. They done let me in the room where I learn the business. The business.
Mm-hmm.
See, we too busy trying to figure out a lot of times stand in front of the camera, take a bow. Ah, yeah, I saw you on TV, B. Yeah, but you ain't know I lost $20 million in stand up. You know what I'm saying? So I learned the rules of the game. And once I learned the rules, well, they can't take that back from me. So I then become as good or the best in the game or whatever I do. I'm that good. I'm good. And I will go through every day right now. My day, on most days, once it gets quiet and I get off these phones and the meetings and all that, I go find a quiet space, go back over the day, all that I did wrong, things I should have done better, things that I handled right and I can pat myself on the back, came out of the room with the right stuff, you know, stuff like that. If I don't do it that night, the next day, before I jump back in the trenches, normally that's what I do. I go through my prior day or days, where I'm at on deals and what I'm doing and how I messed that up. I shouldn't have said that. I mean, you go through all that. So I do anyway. And I say, okay, you know, then I got to put a twist on it over here. Got to do that. Got to do this. But all the time, I know that if I don't get something right, I could be out of business. So I got to stay on my game.
Right.
And again, it's that fear. It's a fear of failing.
Mm-hmm.
I have a fear of failing. I'm the worst loser. I don't like to lose at a game of Monopoly. My kids, we'll play Monopoly. I go to bed mad if they beat me in Monopoly. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm going to bed mad because they done beat me at a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how competitive I am.
Right.
So I don't know what that says. But that's how I'm driven.
That says a lot, and that's one of the things that I admire most about you. I mean, you hear a lot of stories about people doing things, but I've always looked at you. First, it's something, as you mentioned, people always see those who are out front.
Right.
But I would always see successful events, and
right.
I'm always looking to see who's the guy.
That's right.
Put that together.
That's right.
Stumbled across you, and
mm-hmm.
I said, that is the ultimate deal maker. How did you sharpen your deal making skills? How did that come about? Is that just,
I guess through my family business, automobile business. My dad started he started a little used car lot in Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. and so then when I finally went to work for him, which you know is the hardest thing in the world to do, work for your parents. I finally went to work for him. And he didn't let me come in the office, sit down with the other car salesmen, and, you know, learn to sell cars. I'm changing tires and batteries, and I'm like, what is this? This is my family business. I'm out here changing tires and batteries? Something wrong with this.
Right.
You know what I mean? But I'm glad I did it, because that took me to where I knew from one end of the business right on up to the top. You know what I mean? And then became the guy, took our business to another level. We were the first blacks to own new car dealer. We had Oldsmobile Buick right outside of Philly, and did very well. The family did very well. And so I think I learned, you know, you negotiate with people, you know, to come out to buy cars, you know what I mean? And I'm a people person,
mm-hmm.
so it was not even like work to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even like work.
I know you have to go. Can I just get two more questions?
Yep.
Quick, if that's possible, just two more questions. If you were to advise someone who was interested in becoming an entrepreneur, a new entrepreneur, what should be the first steps that they should take?
Well, the first step, it's depending upon what that is, what they want to do. But the one thing that they have to have deep in their heart, in their mind, their soul, and their spirit, is that they're prepared to give up what, and normally people start at a young age, so it's even harder because you want to do what young people do. You want to hang out, you want to do this. I got to where, you know, I'd be doing things. I wouldn't go to the parties, to the clubs, to the this, to the that. Because I'm on the grind. I'm on another schedule, Jack. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, I'm doing some other thing. I'm trying to grow up and put some more zeros in the bank.
Right.
I ain't trying to, you know, so it's a whole lot you have to be prepared to give up. Mm-hmm. And people say they do, but that's not true. I mean, I used to, in the car business, we used to get in, open the place up 9, 10 o'clock, everything's rolling, leave there 10, 11 o'clock by the time I shut it down. This is 6 days a week, you know what I mean? And I'm 20, 21 years old. That ain't what a 20, 21-year-old guy is looking to be doing, working six days a week, 14, 16 hours a day. You know, so there's a lot of, you know, a lot of things. I can't say what they should do, but they have to feel, one, if they can, particularly if you can find something you like to do,
mm-hmm.
that takes a lot out of it because it makes it not so much like work.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to be prepared. And if you're in a relationship, either with a girlfriend, got family, got kids, you're married, you got to be prepared to have the right partner in the relationship that understands what you're trying to do and be there to support you, and not every time you call up, well, where you at? Oh, I'm trying to blah, blah, blah. Oh,
right.
I ain't got time to you. I ain't seen you in that. See all that kind of stuff. You can't handle that. Your partner right. don't know, but that ain't good. You need somebody there saying, I got you. Just go ahead. Keep on doing what you do. I'll be here waiting on you. You
right.
know what I mean? Or whatever you need me to do. That, so it's a lot of things, and you gotta be. I don't know. You gotta just be prepared to find yourself willing to sacrifice a lot of your young years to build a brand, to build a nest egg, to build stability. Because you can't wait till you're 50 to start trying to be an entrepreneur. You
right.
know what I mean? Not that it's never too late. Now, don't let me say it's ever too late.
Right.
But in most cases, you know, you start off you're young. You know, you're trying to build yourself a brand.
There's a learning curve, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's a learning curve.
Yes, sir. So, yeah. I mean, it's a lot to it, man. I wish I had the answers. I'm trying to right now. Still continue to get my kids to understand it so that my kids and my grandkids, because that's who I'm working for now. Hell, I shouldn't be here talking to nobody. I should be down the island somewhere with my legs crossed on the beach,
right.
chilling,
right.
you know what I mean? Because I done worked this long all these years, and I can afford to do it. But I'm trying to set in place a family legacy that we can do stuff in sports and entertainment, always be a place for us to come and earn and eat from our own table, and not with our heads bowed and a hand out trying to get something to go, you know what I mean? So I got to set the table. Part of it is my fault because, you know, your kids, you always try to make their thing better. So they didn't have to put that grind on early like me. So when I be getting in their butt, you know what I mean, What? I'm up. I'm rolling. I don't need it. I ain't trying to be in the record business. I ain't trying to be in this business. I ain't trying to do that. They looking at me like, you crazy. No, I ain't crazy. But I tell y'all what, you better start to get this. You better start getting this now, because I'm going to pass this baton. You better get it.
Thank you for listening to my conversations with Black millionaire entrepreneurs. And if you want more tips, more strategies, more notifications that would really take you into the mindset of these brilliant Black millionaire entrepreneurs, I need you to take out your phone and text my brother, that's the keyword, my brother, to 58885. Just text the keyword, my brother, to 58885. Or if you prefer, you can go online and just go to blackmillionairemindset.com. And once you enter your name and your email, I will immediately send you my video training, 10 Keys to Unlock Your Own Millionaire Mindset. So again, you can go to blackmillionairemindset.com, enter your name and email, and I'll send you the video training, or you can text the keyword, my brother, to 58885, and I'll make sure that you get the video training. This is your brother Bedford, and I look forward to seeing you and hearing from you in the next Conversations with Black Millionaire Entrepreneurs. Take care.